beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Ta-da! Poppy power!
Blackie Roo?
Uncle Scooby? Scrappy Dappy Doo!
Scooby Dooby Doo!
Hello and welcome to Tooncast Beyond's Animation Direction Spotlight. I am one of your hosts, TFG1Mike, and joining me is TV's Mr. Dale.
Watch me trick Fred out of his delicious fruity pebbles.
Now I have to find pebble commercials to put in this episode.
I can do both Barneys. I can do that Barney. I can also do the nasally Barney. Ah, gee, Fred.
You know, the non-nasally Barney is the best Barney.
I like the old Barney. The before Mel Blanc's car accident.
I don't know. So we are here. This is Animation Direction Episode 9. We got two left after this. But tonight we're going to be talking about William Hanna and Joseph Barbera, along with everything else that they've created. This is going to be a very interesting discussion.
Oh, yes. A lot of ground to cover.
Oh, my God. We're going to be here all night. Not really, but... I find it so funny sometimes, and I know you find funny things on Wikipedia, but I find it really funny that they list what actually happened to the Hanna-Barbera Productions Incorporated. They list it as fate in the right-hand corner. I'm like, fate, are you serious? Are you seriously going to call it that? It just sounds so weird and final, and yeah. I don't know. Hanna and Barbera, you know, they, with Hanna, his early career, you know how we always wonder what certain starlets' jobs were before they got into what we know them for?
Mm-hmm.
Hanna worked briefly as a construction engineer and helped build the Pantages Theater in Hollywood.
Wow.
Sadly, he lost that job during the Great Depression and found another at a car wash. Let's see.
And then he went on to do this silly little thing called being a cartoonist.
Mm-hmm. He got the opportunity to direct his first cartoon in 1936. The result was Two Spring, part of the Harmonizing Happy Harmonies series.
Oh, wow.
Yep. The following year, MGM decided to terminate their partnership with Harmonizing and bring production in-house. Hanna was among the first people MGM hired away from Harmonizing to their new cartoon studio. During 38-39, he served as senior director on MGM's Captain and the Kids series. Do you remember that series? Because I don't.
Not at all.
Okay.
I've heard of it.
Okay. I don't know, might have been something we might have seen somewhere.
Possibly.
Let's see here. And, you know, in 40, both Hanna and Barbera, because by that time they were all together by 1940, they started, they jointly directed Puss Gets the Boot, which was nominated for Academy Award for Best Cartoon Short Subject. Yep. So that was the beginning of Hanna with Barbera.
And the beginning of Tom and Jerry. Although at that point, the cat was named Jasper, I think. And I don't know if the mouse had a name.
You know what? I know this is silly, but, I really love seeing cartoons nowadays try to spoof. I mean, it's fairly easy to spoof the format of Tom and Jerry. I mean, any cat can chase any mouse. But just how certain cartoon series will come up with different ways to spoof them, and you look at it immediately like, hey! Let's see. With Joseph Barbera, he... trying to see your early career. During high school, Barbera worked as a tailor's delivery boy, During the Great Depression, he tried unsuccessfully to become a cartoonist for a magazine called the NY Hits magazine. He supported himself with a job at a bank and continued to pursue publication for his cartoons. His magazine drawings of single cartoons, not comic strips, began to be published in Red Book, Saturday Evening Post, and Collier's, the magazine with which he had the most success. If that's the same Red Book I'm thinking of, I cannot believe. Joe Barbera published in Red Book, the women's magazine. That's a little strange to me.
You gotta start somewhere.
No, I know, it's just...
a lot of cartoonists are also secretly fashion magazine illustrators.
Yep. Interesting. We'll have to see if any of that pops up with Mr. Jones later.
It's possible.
He started at Terrytoons. He was lured away by a substantial salary increase. He left Terrytoons New York for the new Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer MGM cartoon unit in California in 1937. Found that Los Angeles was suffering just as much from the Great Depression as Brooklyn, and almost returned to Brooklyn.
Jeez. And by the way, I think Terrytoons is the Mighty Mouse.
Yeah.
Studio.
Yeah. His first solo effort was a storyboard about a character named Kiko the Kangaroo. Storyline was of Kiko on an airplane race with another character called Dirty Dog. Terry declined to produce the story in his autobiography. Barbera stated, said of his efforts, quote, "I was quite honestly not in the least disappointed. I had proven to myself that I could do a storyboard and that I had gained the experience of presenting it. For now, that was enough." Really, where it really comes all in for the two of them is Tom and Jerry and 40. Barbera and Hanna both worked alongside animator Tex Avery, who had created Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny for Warner Brothers and directed Droopy cartoons at MGM. I love how they have... I would have loved to have seen Hanna-Barbera. I would have loved to have seen them at MGM in those days, because the way that I read this part of the wiki article, it makes it sound like it's a police precinct, that Barbera's desk was opposite that of William Hanna. So I'm thinking of, you know what I mean? I'm thinking of, you know, two detectives, kind of like Valiant and Valiant, where their desks were, you know, pushed together and, you know, they could look at each other. I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah,
that would have been just seeing Hanna and Barbera have the desks together like that, and you know, their first moments, you know, meeting. I would love to see that stuff.
I love the detective office scenario, because then you could have a floozy walk in the door.
Yeah, absolutely.
She was trouble, see?
Yeah, she was trouble, see? Yeah. So let's see here. So they pretty much team up on Tom and Jerry, and from there on, it's history. I mean, it's all animation history at this point. What were your first? Do you remember the very first Hanna-Barbera cartoon you ever saw?
Oh, that would be very difficult to say. I'm gonna say it was probably the Flintstones, just because that was in syndication at the time, but. You also have to consider that Tom and Jerry was also in syndication. And at the time, I didn't even know that was Hanna-Barbera. I never made that connection until much later. Mm. And like I said on other shows, too, like for the Tom and Jerry cartoons, the old syndication package would chop off the credits. So even if I wanted to know, I would never have any way of knowing that was them.
Mm. Yeah, it was probably both Tom and Jerry and the Flintstones for me. There are so many of the Hanna-Barbera Tom and Jerry cartoons that I absolutely love. There just are. Jerry's cousin, Muscles. Oh my god, I love that one.
I love Uncle Tex.
Uncle Tex, yeah. No. Is it Uncle Tex? No, it's Uncle Pecos, isn't
that's
it?
That's what it is. It's Uncle
Pecos. Yeah, it's Uncle Pecos. Yeah, I'll have to put him in here somewhere. Can't sing without a guitar string. Wow, I can't believe I actually pulled that off, considering I'm half dead with a cold. But Hannah and Barbara, they really are. I mean, along with the rest of the, you know, directors we've already talked about, like Tex and, you know, probably in your opinion to a lesser extent, McKimson and all of them, you know, they are pioneers. I mean, they had been doing this forever, it seems like. And it's really hard for me to imagine time back then because, you know, I look at time now. Okay, it's 2014. I'll be 35 years old in 2.5 months' time. And it's like, where did the last 35 years go? Or where did the last 20 years go? And it's like, I can't imagine living in the 30s and 40s and saying, you know, by 1950 or 60, oh, it that was 30 years ago. I just can't imagine that. Mm-hmm. So we have them pioneering with Tom and Jerry. What else should we bring up before we get to too many of the actual production company stuff?
In terms of like,
of them themselves.
I don't know. I kind of want to get into the individual cartoons, both the studio or both the theatrical and the television side.
Okay. Where do we want to start with that?
Well, have we exhausted Tom and Jerry yet, or did we have?
Oh no, you could never exhaust Tom and Jerry
because there's like, I almost want to say there are like different eras of Tom and Jerry. There's like. It's hard to really put into words, but there's kind of a classic golden era, and then there's one where there's like an era where it's like a much wider screen format, but the colors are more natural, and it actually starts to resemble their television animation, but it's much smoother, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having trouble putting it into words exactly how these differentiate from each other, but the wider screen format is like the later ones, and that's where they start getting more abstract. Mm-hmm. And they almost kind of resemble Tex Avery cartoons at that point, but not quite. I don't know. There's
well, when you say eras of Tom and Jerry, I know you're talking about specifically the Hanna-Barbera era.
Yeah, within the Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, see, when you say eras of the Tom and Jerry franchise, all as I can think of is you start with Hanna and Barbera.
And then the Gene Deitch.
You sadly go to Deitch, and then you go to Chuck Jones.
Yeah.
You know, I just, like, it, I, you know, I know we're here talking about H&B, but I'm sorry, those Deitch cartoons kill me. They just hurt my soul, man. They really do.
I kind of like them because they're weird and kind of drug-addled. I don't know how to describe it. And besides, they are leaps and bounds better than the Filmation ones.
Well, yeah, but can we really count that?
No. That was a mistake. That was like someone in the MGM offices was like. You signed away Hanna-Barbera to who? Tom and Jerry? You signed them away to what? Oh my god, that someone got fired that day, I think.
Let's hope.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. But the Tom and Jerry era, I always loved how they would do, and I know everyone nowadays hates clip shows, but I love the short where I forget what the black cat's name is off the top of my head.
It changes. I think the most common name for him is Butch.
Okay, Butch. Yeah. I love when Butch gets with the rest of his pals and shows all these bloopers and outtakes and all. It's cuts of other Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like hey, Tom, remember this time when Jerry did this? You know, and they show all the classic scenes. I love stuff like that. I don't know why, but I find the one where Tom is supposed to be a baby, I find that so depressing and violent. She pours, doesn't she give him like nitroglycerin or she gives him some sort of chemical.
Castor oil.
Castor oil, that's what it was.
Somebody told me once what that was, and I it's disgusting and I don't remember.
I see where Ruger and them got the dark aspects for Elmira based on that. Oh my god. Oh.
Speaking of that, one of the best what was it? The dog and the kid that were part of Animaniacs. It was it Mindy and Buttons? Yeah. One of the best ones is when they go onto the construction site. Buttons is chasing Mindy, and they run into Tom and Jerry, and then Popeye chasing Sweepy. That was like the best joke.
So awesome. What was the other one? They use this on Cartoon Network and Boomerang all the time for advertisements. When they're talking about, you know, oh, Tom and Jerry, the cat chases the mouse and whatever else, and they say Tom is good with this and Jerry's good with this. They always show the scene of Tom, Jerry, and Spike with trying to hit each other, and Tom always misses Spike, but Jerry always hits Tom in the leg with a lead pipe. Tom and Jerry is such good stuff. It really is.
Yeah.
And the music and just the background music on the credits. I mean, Scott Bradley was amazing.
Oh yeah.
And Scott Bradley and Scott Bradley and Carl Stalling. If you had those two together, it would be the best music ever for cartoons. It really would. At least cartoons like this. What other Tom and Jerry bits do you want to bring up?
I'm just trying to remember some of the funnier ones. I like the one where Tom tries to poison the milk and it accidentally turns Jerry into like a Hulk.
Yep.
And I think back at that now, I'm like, boy, they would never air this. They'd be scared to death of kids going in the cabinet under the sink and trying to drink the Drano and shit like that.
I forget. I know there's one. I'm trying to remember. There's one where, is it Nibbles? Where Nibbles comes over and they both become invisible. And they haunt Tom.
Yeah.
I know there's several of those in the Jones era, but I know there's at least one in the Hanna-Barbera era. I will say the one that I really remember the most because it was so awesome was the Ice Follies episode, the Ice Follies short where they rip open the refrigerator, Jerry cuts the cords and turns the kitchen into an ice rink.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, this is so funny. Or the one where they're musketeers and Tom is the cardinal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's just such good stuff.
I'm trying to remember if there was actually more than one of those, because I seem to remember different endings to that. Like, there's one where they're coming back and they turn around, they see the guillotine come down. It's Tom getting executed for some reason.
Well, yeah, there's that one, and there's the one I was talking about.
Yeah.
The guillotine one, I think, is because it was one of the kings wouldn't. The king wanted sleep. He wanted to sleep, and he needed peace and quiet. And obviously a cat and a mouse running around the castle was not exactly peaceful. And the king had said, okay, one more time. And Nibbles actually saves Tom at one point. And then the next time, you know, it just doesn't happen, and whoosh, Tom's off with his head.
That's one of the darker endings of a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I love the one. I love the Robin Hood one.
Oh, yes.
Because Nibbles has to. Nibbles puts on this Irish accent. Now, explain this to me. Why is it that Tom and Jerry can't talk, but Nibbles can? The little guy mouse, the gray mouse. I never understood that.
If I had to kind of work backwards through a theory of that, I would guess that the early cartoons, they just had, like, they were just based on silent shorts where they could just do all this Buster Keaton type stuff. And then later, when they wanted to actually do scripts, they were like, well, these characters don't talk, so they would start introducing characters that can, like Mammy Two Shoes and that little irritating duckling and Nibble.
You don't like Yaki?
He's okay, but the voice gets on your nerves after a while. He's no Donald.
Well, no, he's no Donald, but that reminds me of the one where he's like, that's my mama. It's like, oh my god.
My favorite one, I don't remember if it has that duck in it, but it's the one where he keeps pestering the mother duck or something.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, I think he runs over the mother duck with the lawnmower and opens up her.
Yeah,
and then she calls for the husband, and the husband comes and beats the shit out of Tom.
Beats the shit out of Tom. Yep. Yeah. So awesome. I mean, it is just so much with Tom and Jerry. There really, really is.
Right.
I'm trying to think. What was the? There was another one. Oh god, the Valentine's Day episodes. Oh my god. There's a short where Jerry's just ready to continue the fight. You know, he's you know, woken up and whatever else, and he throws something at Tom, and Tom just stares off into nothing. Tom has gotten, you know, infatuated by some woman cat and whatever else, and he just kind of shoos Jerry away, just doesn't even care. So then it becomes Jerry's ultimate mission to get Tom back in the game.
You realize just how aggressive Jerry really is. Yep. Is that he gets irritated when Tom's not chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a domestic violence sort of situation. You think that the violence is only one way, but actually it's very mutual.
Oh yeah, no. It's very mutual. It's kind of like Pixie, Dixie, and Jinx.
Yes.
Oh, man. But there's that one. There's the Muscle Beach one where they all go to the beach and Tom puts balloons in his red suit.
Yes.
There's, is it Zoot Suit Cat? Again, I'm not looking up titles, people. I do remember the cartoons, because as I'm talking them out, I'm remembering them and laughing about them, obviously, but there's one where, Tom calls up this other cat, and he tries to be, like, really, like, this whole Zoot Suit kind of 50s kind of style, you know, like, you know, Jive Turkey and all that kind of stuff, and... It, I don't remember the title of it, but by the end of it, the suit shrinks and it becomes Jerry's size. So Jerry gets the cat lady for some odd reason, and they dance it, and they dance it out in the end. But it's just so funny, because there are several. That is one time that Tom talks. The other time that Tom talks is again another love infested thing where he's playing. Oh, God. He's playing some... I don't want to say what instrument it is, because I know I'm going to be wrong, and people are going to be screaming at their iPods and whatever else.
It's like a standing bass, I think. Where he's singing to the girl on the balcony.
Yep, yep.
Is you is, or is you is ain't my you baby. Ain't
my baby. Yep, yep. I, for some odd reason, the term oboe was flashing in my head, and I don't think that's proper. But I think standing bass is more in line. And I love that one because that's one of the ones where Spike gets tied up. And you, hey, did you notice over the lifespan of the Tom and Jerry shorts, they actually had to change the dog's name? Because in a few of the shorts, his name is Killer.
Yeah, and I think in a few, and it was even Butch. The name Butch kind of floats around from character to character. And I think part of it was that they wanted to differentiate the dog character from the Tex Avery shorts so they didn't constantly have the same name. So that one became Butch, and the Hanna-Barbera one became Spike.
Mm-hmm. Which I kind of like that the Hanna-Barbera one became Spike, because then we got Spike and Tyke Droopy and Droopy. Oh, come on, Tom and Jerry kids, that was kind of awesome.
Some parts that were okay. I actually liked the Droopy cartoons in that. Those were pretty good.
Yep. There weren't enough Spike and Tyke, like, solo things there. But
That was one of the few, we're going to kidify a character and actually have it work.
I think the Flintstones one kind of worked.
It wasn't. I didn't like the Flintstone kids that much, but I did like Captain Caveman and Son for sure. I like how I like the show within a show somehow.
Yeah. All right. So we get to, let's see. I guess we might as well talk about Fred, Barney, Wilma, and Betty, and Pebbles and Bam Bam, and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So
how far into that series did Bam Bam even show up? It wasn't immediately, right?
I think he came in around season 4 or 5. See, he was pretty late. But the move to TV was kind of rough for them because they were used to doing this high quality animation, like second only to Disney. And then they have to like really cut the corners and they did so in a similar way to what Pantomime Pictures and Jay Ward cartoons were doing, which was to layer cells on top of each other so that you could have a static character and then just have another cell where it's the lips flapping. And that's how they did the Flintstones and Rough and Ready and the Jetsons and all those early cartoons. Rough and Ready was weird because it was like a short subject cartoon, but it was all like in a single storyline. If you put them all together, it's like a little movie almost. But that's like the first cartoon that went to air. And the Flintstones, I don't remember exactly where it's one of the very first ones they did for TV. And until The Simpsons came along, it was the most successful primetime cartoon ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and I love the early Flintstones. I think it kind of jumps the shark as soon as you get the Pebbles, but like the early ones were, like I said, Barney has the nasally voice and the art style is kind of rough. Like, hiya, Fred. I love those early cartoons. The pool episode, I was watching that yesterday and God damn, that's a funny cartoon.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's because I'm so used to the episodes with Mel,
yeah,
that when I hear the nasally one, it's like, wait, what happened?
Well, that is Mel Blanc, and I have a theory. I don't know if this is true, but it seemed to be around Mel's car accident. He was missing for about half of season 2, so they had to have Dawes Butler do Barney, and Dawes Butler was the guy who kind of came up with the dopey voice. He was like, "Hey, yo, Fred." And so after that, Mel came back and he had to do the voice differently. Or at least I think that's what happened. But, that's how we got the second Barney voice.
Yeah. I still love the second Barney voice because that's the one I most know out of them all. What do you think of them? Because let's be honest, the Flintstones is a homage for them. For the Honeymooners.
Oh, yeah.
Really is. I mean, it's clear as day.
Well, what's his name? God damn it. The actor, the Honeymooners.
Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, Jackie Gleason actually wanted to sue them, but he didn't think the show would last. He was not amused by that at all. In fact, he knew Alan Reed, and Alan Reed was like, "Hey, I'm kind of doing you in this cartoon voice," and he never spoke to Alan again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was kind of bitter about that. But I don't know why. It was a loving homage to that show.
Yeah. Well, he got bitter about this, but yet he doesn't get bitter about the Honey Mousers. I mean, come on.
Well,
the Honey... Whatever. Anyway.
I don't know if he... I don't remember him ever, like, even commenting on that. I probably just kind of seethed over it silently.
Yeah, for me, I like when they... Because by this point, as we've already stated, they're doing television, and the Flintstones had 6 seasons. Mm-hmm. I like when they develop Fred's character, and they do stuff with him that you wouldn't think that they would do or pull off, and like when he does the multiple personality episode, when he gets hit in the head with a rock, and he becomes Frederick Flintstone. I love that. I thought that was so hilarious.
He's like, "Hello, Bernard."
Yes.
Bernard?
What are you talking about, Fred?
What's going on? Are you okay, here? Fred?
I love that kind of stuff, and I love the Great Gazoo episodes.
Oh God! Oh, Harvey Korman.
You dum-dums.
Hello, dum-dums.
Oh my God. This is so hilarious.
I love Alan Reed as Fred. He just has this way subtle delivery sometimes. Like, I don't remember what the situation was, but I remember him having some sort of accident with Barney, and he says something like, "Barney, get this rock off my hand before I tear you apart." Just because any other actor would just, "I'm going to do it angry." No, Alan Reed did it like super calm and reserved as he's threatening Barney's life.
Yeah, Alan Reed was the ultimate and will always be the ultimate Fred Flintstone. Other actors have done the character over the years, but nobody can touch. Nobody can touch Alan's performance.
The second guy, God, what's that guy's name?
Henry Corden?
Yeah, Henry Corden did a serviceable job, I think. I think he did as good a job as you can expect someone to do.
Yeah. I'm trying to think here.
Interesting note on that is that there was a Flintstones movie called... it's the one where Fred's like a secret agent. A Man Called Flintstone. He sings a song, and in the song, it goes from Alan Reed to Henry Corden. And it is, my knowledge, the only time that both actors did the voice in the same production.
Oh, dang.
It's kind of weird. And then there's the Hard Rock Neighbor episode it was Loud Rock, the character's name was. And it's Henry Corden as the loud neighbor of Fred Flintstone. And hearing those two characters argue, you close your eyes and it's two different eras of Fred Flintstone yelling at each other. It is so weird.
I think the only time, and this is no disrespect to Henry Corden, but the only time that I really paid attention to a difference in the voice was The Ultimate. Because we still have to talk about the other family Hanna-Barbera came up with. Mm-hmm. But The Ultimate is when the two families met each other. Because, oh my God. I remember when Jetsons Meet the Flintstones came out in 87. Mm-hmm. That was one of probably 10 video cassettes that I watched so many times that I eventually wore out each one of those. Like, Transformers the movie, Secret of the Sword, which is He-Man and She-Ra, Jetsons Meet the Flintstones... I'm sure there are others that I'm not thinking of, but, I loved the Jetsons Meet the Flintstones.
And it's pretty much the end of an era, because I think that was the last time Mel did the voice of Barney.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was 87, and he died in 89, so, probably was.
And that as cool as that was, I would have geeked out even more if they had... if they had gotten references to the Roman holidays and Wait Till Your Father Gets Home in that cartoon. But they did. That would have been so awesome, though. It's like, who are these people?
Over the years, after Henry, I'm trying to see here. Why? Okay, so I know this is an animation thing, and we're supposed to be talking about Hanna and Barbera, but since we were talking about the Flintstones here, it kind of ties in. In 1994, I know you're going to hate talking about this, John Goodman was the live-action version of Fred Flintstone.
Oh, God.
I thought he did a fairly good job, for the most part.
Yeah, he did okay.
You know, I mean, for, a live-action Fred Flintstone, I thought he did pretty good. I thought Rick Moranis as Rubble was amazing casting, considering who was out at that time as far as live-action actors. And as much as I love this guy that I'm going to bring up, I don't think he should have done this, but in 2000 they did a sequel, The Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas, yeah. And he was played by Mark Addy. Mark Addy is a wonderful actor. He should not have played Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
I just don't think he should have played Fred Flintstone. Since 2001, it's pretty much for the voice for cartoons. It's pretty much been Jeff Bergman the whole time.
And he's really good. He could do both Freds. He could do the Alan Reed Fred. And the Hedrick mm-hmm. Gordon Fred. He's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
well, on that kind of spin off of that, Hanna-Barbera mm-hmm. did some live action stuff. I think the one that always comes to mind the most is Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, which is a terrible movie. Kiss Mania must have been running wild at that point, because I don't get it. I've seen that movie. Oh my God. Anyway, moving on.
Moving on. Who did you like better, Fred or Barney?
You know, I just like them as a duo. I can't really pick, because they both have their funny quirks, and It's like, who do you like better, Abbott or Costello? It's like, well, one without the other isn't funny.
Yeah, true. What is your opinion of Dino?
Dino? I like Dino. I kind of like the talking Dino, but I'm glad it only lasted one episode, because that would have gotten old.
Yeah, especially with what would happen later with the other dog in the other series. Ralph as anyone who knows who Ralph as is, you know who we're going to talk about in a little while. I like Dino. It's so weird to me. I catch, because I've said this, you know, between podcasting and everything else I do for Geekcast Radio Network and whatever else, mine and Steve's network, but most of the time I'm awake at 1:30 in the morning, so I'll catch the old Flintstones reruns on Boomerang, because I'll be waiting for the Looney Tunes 2 a.m. run. And every time lately I've seen them, when Dino goes in to run into lay in the chair that Fred vacates, he's not pink, or he's not reddish, maroonish, cranberry sauce Dino. He's like greenish blue.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know what that was, but
they must have had that intro done way in advance, and they were like, we're not going to redo this. And that
they actually did change it several times, though, on the closing.
Yeah, later when they had the new opening song. That's a funny thing, mm-hmm. is that the original opening that you just referenced, that was not in the original syndication package that I remember from when I was a kid. When they finally showed that on Cartoon Network, I'm like, what's this?
Yeah.
And suddenly all the music cues made sense, because the early episodes have a different music cue. Mm-hmm. And it always seemed kind of weird to me. And then I heard the original theme song.
Hmm. What's the difference between the original theme and
the original theme is a different melody, and it doesn't have any lyrics.
Oh, it's that's just right.
Da 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 da.
That's right. That's right. Oh man, I believe. Was it? They were a... No, it wasn't a Jeopardy category. It was referenced on some game show about... Oh, God, I'm trying to think. What was it? It was one of those question and answer game shows. It was probably a rerun, but it was... I know what it was. It was the revamp of Pressure Luck. It was Whammy, the all-new Pressure Luck, and they said, you know, the Flintstones go rolling down the street courtesy of what? And it's courtesy of Fred's 2 feet. I still love the Flintstones to this day. You know, you said it earlier. There's not a lot of cartoons like the Flintstones now. I mean, okay, sure, we have Simpsons, we have Family Guy, but that's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, Flintstones was the animated version of the Honeymooners. It really was.
Right.
You just look at it. You Fred and Barney. That's easily Ralph and crap. What'd you say?
Ralph and Norton.
Norton, thank you. And you know, obviously Wilma and Betty are Ralph's wife and Norton's wife. And then you bring the boss in, Mr. Slate. That's one thing I wish they did a little bit more with that show, is show them working more. I know the whole point is to, after they come home from work, to have adventures and everything else, but I kind of would have liked to see the rock quarry a little bit more.
Yeah, it was generally used as like scene transitions. It's like, oh, here's Fred at work, and then the whistle blows, and it's time to go home.
Mm-hmm. All right, so since we talked about the prehistoric family, shall we talk about the family of the future?
Oh, yes.
What was your initial... I mean, now, as an adult, what would your initial impression have been on for the Jetsons? Were you against it? Did you like it? Was like, where's all the prehistoric stuff? What was your opinion on Jetsons?
My opinion, I loved the Jetsons when I was a kid, just because I recognized the art style as being the Flintstones, but set in a different timeline, or a different era, I should say. And nowadays, I love the fact that it's kind of a commentary on how modern conveniences kind of make us lazy. It's like, George Jetson has like a 3-hour workday, and he gets tired from pressing buttons. He's got this demanding boss who's really not asking him to do that much, but still he's like, "Ah, that's slave driver." I love that that you have the competitor, because it's like, it's kind of a commentary on capitalism. Only it does, unlike nowadays, it's not beating you over the head with it. It's just kind of like, "Yeah, this is here." Mm-hmm. And you have Cogswell Cogs. I love the rivalry. How it's just them selling the most mundane product, and they're very competitive over it.
Well, you know, all Transformers need sprockets and cogs.
I know, but they're just selling gears.
I know. Ew. Who would want to buy him?
Oh. I don't know.
You know, I love the Jetsons. I know a lot of people don't like the 80s version. They prefer the 60s version.
I'm in that category.
I like them both. Because... again, as a kid, I wasn't, you know, like you said, they cut the credits on some of the old, you know, shorts and stuff. For me, I didn't know the difference. Like, I wasn't paying too much of a difference. Like, I kind of figured that by the time Astro and Orbity joined up, that it was the 80s package. I kind of figured that out as a kid, but I don't know. It all kind of ran together for me. What made it so different for you that you could tell the difference between them?
I think it just comes from being an illustrator. I recognize an art style shift, and all of a sudden one day I'm like, why does this look like the Smurfs? It just that was the first that came to mind. This looks like the style from the Smurfs. What's going on here? And I realized that there was about 2 decades of a transition going on. And you have the annoying character Orbity, and I don't think they brought anyone else in. I don't think anyone had died yet, so they pretty much had the exact same cast.
Wow.
Well, it's true. Like, yeah, that's about the era where a lot of those guys are starting to die off. I mean, not on this show, but Hong Kong Phooey, you had,
Scatman.
Scatman Crothers, who died in 86, so right about this time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the Jetsons, the later Jetsons are okay. Some of them are all right, but as on a whole, I much prefer the original series just because, you know, part of it is that it's an overseas production, and there's something about overseas productions. It's like you don't have the ability to kind of work with the animators as they're doing the art. You're just mailing everything over to another country, and then you're waiting for it to come back. Whereas in the 60s, it was all in-house, so the animator is doing something, the director can come right up to him, look over his shoulder, and he goes, oh, that's funny, but do this and that. And that's kind of the difference for me, is that I can see all the subtlety and all the things that they're doing on the fly. And then in the later cartoons, that doesn't happen.
Mm. Yeah. I had no idea until I just saw this, but Wilma Flintstone is in the Jetsons.
Yeah, she's the robot.
Rosie the Robot.
Yeah, that took me a while. She's actually very talented. I didn't realize, because you're so used to the female voice artist kind of being rotated in and out. It's like Daphne and Velma always had different voices depending on what year it was. But like Jean Vanderpyle, she was in it for the long run. So I didn't even realize that was her until, like, I don't know, maybe Jetsons the movie.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Dog himself, Don Messick, as Astro.
Yeah, Don Messick.
Astro and Scooby, I'm sorry, Don. I love you, man, but I'm sorry. Astro and Scooby could be brothers.
Pretty much.
They really could be, as far as the voice goes. I like it, though. I think it's cool. I think it's interesting. I always like Astro. I know some people don't, but I've always liked him because you have to have that dog character to, you know, obviously you need somebody for Elroy to play with, because Judy is so boy crazy, she's not going to play with her little brother.
Plus he also fills the role of Barney. Because in the Jetsons, George did not have that companion that Fred had. So you kind of, who do you have left? You have the dog. And it's like, okay, let's give the dog a speaking role. So that's why Astro works as a talking character, but Dino doesn't.
Yep. I think I'm trying to remember here. There were several episodes that I do remember of the Jetsons. I don't remember which version, though, they are from. There's one where Jane has button-itis or something, where she's so stressed out about pressing buttons, she goes to a dude ranch for a week.
Oh, yeah.
There's the one where...
Again, first world problems, Jane.
There's the one where George is leading Elroy's scout troop.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to bring along Cosmo's son. Or nephew, or... I think it is Spacely's son. I don't remember off the top of my head. What do you think about the theme song?
I don't know. It's a good theme song. It's not as catchy as the Flintstones, I don't think. Because, I don't know, it's I don't know how to describe it, but it's not as catchy. It's not something you can just hum. Because it's like, da, 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 da. And, I don't know, the Flintstones song is much smoother, so you could whistle it and people know what it was. Or it's the Jetsons, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that was their doorbell.
Yeah, that is awesome. Do, 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 do. Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, the Jetsons were pretty awesome. I do remember, I think it's on the interview with Andrea Romano for Rob Paulsen's Talking Tunes podcast. This was a couple of years ago. She tells a story about George Hanlon.
Yeah.
About when he passed away and how sick he was. And that he pretty much passed away doing the voice of George Jetson.
Yeah. Jetsons, the movie, is kind of weird to watch because you can tell that it's not him the whole way through. I think it was Jeff Bergman who filled in for both him and Mel Blanc, for both George and Mr. Spacely. And you can kind of hear it going in and out. It's subtle that maybe you wouldn't catch it, but I can catch it.
Right. I mean, and Mel is Mr. Spacely. Oh, my God. We're going to have to hold off on really gushing about Mel because we're going to do a whole episode about him. But, George O'Hanlon, the last thing he did as an actor was Jetsons the movie. There is a break because... Okay, the original series for the Jetsons only was one season, right? 62 to 63.
Right.
Which IMDb makes it look kind of weird. They have it listed as 62 to 87, but whatever.
That's a very weird way to list it. I know what they're doing, but yeah, that's not accurate.
I'm trying to see who was... Yeah, Jeff Bergman pretty much... took over after Hanlon died.
Yeah, the sad thing is that actress you just mentioned, what's her name? I'm sorry.
Vanderpile?
The voice of Judy Jetson.
Janet...
Janet Waldo.
Janet Waldo, yeah.
Maybe you didn't... she actually recorded all the lines for Judy for that movie, and then they replaced her with Tiffany.
Which was the dumbest thing ever. Worst thing ever.
Thanks, Dad.
Oh, God. Just so bad. Anything else you want to talk about on the Jetsons?
Not really. I think we exhausted the Jetsons.
All right. Well, there is no exhaustion for a pup named Scooby-Doo, right?
Oh, yes. That's a good show, but we're going to be talking about the original, aren't we?
Yeah. Scooby-Doo and its many incarnations. And the hatred that this series has gotten over the years.
I don't understand
I don't understand it either. Like, I get it. It's very procedural. Oh my God, Scooby-Doo is the first cartoon crime procedural we've ever had. When you think about it in just a cartoon way.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see a lot of Scooby-type cartoon characters doing what they did. But Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Scooby-Doo, I don't know what else it was called. It was called many different things over the years.
Well, it had various different production names and production numbers, and that's why they have all different titles for the show, even though it's more or less the same program.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think the reason why Scooby-Doo is kind of maligned, although sometimes lovingly, is just that's the cartoon where the shortcuts of Hanna-Barbera are, like, the most apparent. You know, where they're using the same cells over and over and the same run cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And the rotating background where it's just the same door going by over and over. It's like all the stuff that you see that's like done to death in Filmation cartoons started here.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Scooby-Doo was the birth of stock animation.
Yeah, but somehow they did it in a way that it wasn't as noticeable.
True. True. You know, Scooby, there are certain cartoons that I like from Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And I'm just going to call it Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Whatever, it's, you know, multiple versions. But there are certain episodes I like, certain episodes I can't stand. But outside of his radio gigs, I think this is the first time I ever heard Casey Kasem as Shaggy.
Yeah, we did a show about him, and I don't think I think he did Shaggy and Cliff Jumper, and I don't remember much else. and I was trying to remember, and I'm like, wow, he didn't really do a lot, did he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is he still on ice, by the way? I think as of this recording, he's still in a freezer somewhere.
You had to bring that up, didn't you? You asshole. I don't know why.
Like soinks.
Oh, God. Worst Shaggy ever.
Yeah, I'm not good at Shaggy.
It just, I know I didn't know Casey Kasem at all. I never had a chance to meet the guy. I would have loved to have. But just the way his life turned out just makes me so sad. It really does. That woman just destroyed his life.
She's crazy.
Yeah. She's crazier than half the Scooby villains.
Yeah. I remember Ralph Garman made a joke about it. Like, when he was close to death, how the family got him back away from his wife. Like, after when she was trying to get him out of the country and they intercepted that, Ralph Garman made a joke that she would have gotten away with it if not for those meddling kids. Oh, my God. Awesome. Greatest joke ever.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the most reused joke ever.
Yes.
When it comes to cartoon jokes, that's the most reused joke ever. So with Scooby-Doo, we have Don Messick as Scooby, we have Casey as Shaggy. Mm-hmm. In the original, in Where Are You, the first three seasons of Where Are You, we have Nicole Jaffe as Velma. Mm-hmm. And we have someone I cannot even pronounce, Stefiana.
Yeah.
Christofferson, there we go, as Daphne for 17 episodes. And then we have the man, the voice, the guy who, I think at this point, because he's still with us, has probably surpassed Mel Blanc as far as Man of a Thousand Voices.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Frank Welker as Freddie Jones, as Fred Jones, and still playing that role today.
And I believe also the highest grossing movie actor of all time, just because he's been in so many goddamn movies.
Now, if you look at it, like, if there was currently a Scooby series running, which there isn't, Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated was the last one. But if you say there was a Scooby-Doo series going on right now in 2014, mm-hmm. I almost called him Fred Welker. Wow. Frank Welker would have been playing Freddy for 45 years. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's basically just his voice. That's the funny thing, is that he's, mm-hmm. he's known for being able to disguise his voice, do all these goofy sounds and animal whimpers and all that. And his most prolific role is himself.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? It was interesting. I like some of the episodes. They do kind of tend to be repetitive after a while if you watch more than one at one time.
Yeah.
Like if you watch a block of six episodes of the show, you're going to get tired. You're going to get bored. But if you watch one every now and then, it's like, oh, hey, I remember that. Where I really came in, though, was the movies. The new Scooby movies. I love those team-ups. I don't care what anyone says.
Oh, you Scooby-Doo, mean the... You mean the...
It's the Harlem Globetrotters, yeah. Or Scooby-Doo meets Batman and Robin, or Scooby-Doo meets the Addams Family, or what... It's like, this stuff is so cool.
Oh, Robin. That's the other Casey Kasem role I wasn't thinking of.
Yep. Robin, yep.
Did you ever see Frank Caliendo do Robin as Casey Kasem?
I think so, yeah. And
look, Batman, it's a letter from the Riddler. And he writes. It does. I love that bit.
Oh, my God. just looking at their at Hanna and Barbera's filmography, I mean, you know, you've got so many other shows, so many other versions of Scooby, Josie and the Pussycats, Help, It's the Hair Bear Bunch. That's one that I've never, thank God it only had two episodes, but this is one that I never really cared for.
Hair Bear Bunch, that had a bunch of episodes. I actually like that cartoon.
Well,
it's kind of like Disco Yogi, because he has this big bear afro, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like it is kind of like Yogi, because the zookeeper kind of looks like Ranger Smith. Yeah, now that I think about it, yeah, that was kind of a fun show, I thought, because but it's in that later 70s style, so it's like a bit. It's like that kind of maligned era of Hanna-Barbera that people don't really like. You know, the same era that brought us, like, Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch.
And then you have stuff like one of my all-time, just for the characters, not necessarily for the cartoon itself, but just for the characters, because what they show up in beforehand and afterhand. Dastardly and Muttley and their flying machines.
Yes.
Muttley, not Mumbly, Muttley. I don't care what anyone says, it's Muttley. I don't know why they had to change it to Mumbly. Maybe it was a copyright thing or something. I have no clue, but it'll always be Dastardly and Muttley.
They had some... let you get back to this. They had some copyright issues with a couple of the shows, I know, but it was mostly the stuff that they had obviously licensed, like the Genie mm-hmm. cartoon. They don't own that. Or the mm-hmm. not the Super Globetrotters cartoon, but the original Globetrotters cartoons. That they don't own. Yeah. And there's one other one. Oh, it's Addams Family 2200, but I don't think anyone is asking to see that one.
You had Paul Winchell as Dick Dastardly.
Yeah.
And Don Messick as Muttley. Don Messick as Muttley is everybody, even if you don't know that it's Don Messick. But everybody knows how Muttley mumbles. It's like, it's just something that, and I love their interaction with each other between Dastardly and Muttley. I have a clip that I'll put in here somewhere where Dick Dastardly says, "All right, Muttley, if you don't do this, you're not going to get a medal." And Muttley's like, "Medal, yeah. And it's like, wow. Instead of giving, which is so cool, though, because Dastardly and Muttley, instead of Dastardly giving him a Muttley snack, like a Scooby snack, mm-hmm. He gives him a medal. It's just so hilarious. Some of their other series, the Peter Potamus Show, just don't. Some of these characters that they created over the years, the Peter Potamus Show, we've got Grape Ape.
Megilla Gorilla.
Megilla Gorilla.
Who was Sam the Butcher from the Brady Bunch.
Let's see, what else we got? Wait, what?
What?
Oh no, I'm looking at Hanna's IMDb, and it says he was a executive producer, which we all know how much that title really, you know, what that really entails. It's Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley Fonzauer. I'm like, wait,
oh,
what?
Oh my god, yeah, that's during the sad days. You know, anything with Paul Lind in it, because I love Paul Lind. He mm-hmm. did Mildew Wolf. He did The Hooded Claw. I'll get you, Penelope Pit Stop. you know why the Hell's Angels wear black leather? Because chiffon wrinkles.
Wow, you do that actually well.
I love Paul Lind.
Let's see here. So let's he was a producer on Super Friends? Holy crap. That was a Hanna-Barbera show, wasn't it? Wow. I forgot all about that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we got to talk about Wacky Races. Wacky Races and Laugh-Olympics. Laugh Olympics. Oh my god. The Yogi Yahooies, the Scooby Doobies, and the Really Rottens. I love Laugh Olympics. That was such a great, interesting show. It was an interesting show to bring all the characters together.
It was like the ultimate Hanna-Barbera crossover at that time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Wacky Races produced some great characters. I mean, that's pretty much where Dastardly and Muttley came from, right?
And Penelope Pitstop and...
Yep.
And the... I'm trying to remember the little gangsters. They were...
Oh, the Anthill Mob.
Yeah, the Anthill Mob, who were in the Perils of Penelope Pitstop for some reason. But, yeah, that was a weird cartoon.
Well, because they had to always save her from Snidely Snodgrass.
You always thought they were the bad guys in the other cartoon. That's where the Anthill Mob actually started to diversify into characters. Because they really weren't characters in the first cartoon at all.
Yep. What did you think of Wacky Races?
I love Wacky Races. I know I keep saying I love that cartoon. I love the Sarah Pan of Hanna-Barbera, but that cartoon was just... It was just mindless fun because it was the same plot over and over, but it was just like, it was just gag after gag after gag. And it was always that Dick Dastardly was trying to cheat to win, and he'd always come in last.
Yep. I think there was one time he came in first, but then they said, oh, well, you did this, so you're disqualified. I love Wacky Races. Between Wacky Races and Laugh Olympics, if I had those on DVD, I would watch those. I'd just go in, lay down, and just close my eyes and listen. I wouldn't even watch the anime. It's just all the voices in, like, Wacky Races especially. I think why I love Wacky Races so much is the narrator. Yes. The narrator was the best part about Wacky Races. Because in Laugh Olympics, you had Snag and
Mildew Wolf?
Yeah.
Again, all ends.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Snag and Mildew. And you can always tell that Snag was the upbeat, full-on funny comedy guy, and Mildew was the dark cub. It's like really brought it around to a really serious point of a joke.
Yeah.
Oh man. So all right. So is that, ladies and gentlemen, we're not going to be able to get to all that Hanna-Barbera have done, but we're trying to hit all the high points. I guess we could talk about Yogi Bear next.
Yeah, we're gonna skip the GoBots.
Skip them, hell. Just send them to Megatron. They never existed.
You know, there's a joke in Transformers comics where Psykill keeps getting killed by Megatron over and over.
Yep. I've seen that.
Yeah, Yogi Bear. It was a while before I had seen Yogi Bear because he was not in syndication around here until like the very late 80s. In fact, I think the Yogi Bear cartoon had actually replaced the Transformers in the afternoon block that I was watching at the time. And at first, I was very pissed. Then I was like, oh, wait, this is Yogi Bear. I'd wanted to see this for so many years. And that was when they started making new Yogis, just like how they were making new Jetsons cartoons.
Yeah.
But first they showed all of the old Yogis, and I just binged on that every single afternoon, and I loved them.
I just wanted a picnic basket, Ranger Smith, sir. I can't do Yogi. I know our good buddy, my good buddy, the network's good buddy, Brian Ward, one of the DVD producers over at Shout Factory, he does a damn good Yogi.
Yeah. Yogi Bear is very hard to do because you can't just impersonate Yogi. You have to kind of figure out what the original actor is doing, which he was impersonating Art Carney. You have to kind of go to Art Carney and then bring the Yogi out.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love Yogi Bear. I love all the characters that kind of spawned out of that. You know, the guy just wants to eat. He's a hungry bear.
Yeah, and he rapidly rose as the star of Hanna-Barbera. He was actually originally a... like a second or third cartoon on the Huckleberry Hound show, and they were like, this bear cartoon is really funny, and they gave him his own show.
Well, with Huck, I mean, Huck, you can't, I mean, you can do stuff with Huckleberry Hound. They did a lot of stuff with Huckleberry Hound, but Huck can only go so far.
Yeah, the Country Bumpkin thing, it's funny, but it's not as funny as this bear who keeps trying to pull rank on the ranger because he's a government protected bear and he's like, I have my rights, you know. That shit is funny.
This is very funny. Oh man, I know they'll never do this, but I really wish that they would change Smokey into Yogi. Oh, I know they won't do that, but anyway,
they actually did a PSA that was kind of like that. It was Yogi Bear talking about how you should put out your cigarettes and douse your fire when you're at a campsite.
Fight forest fires, yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. What was your favorite Yogi special? Because there were plenty of specials and movies and all that good stuff.
Oh, I'm going to cheat and go right for Hey There, It's Yogi Bear, which is the theatrical movie.
Huh.
That one is really good. It has a lot of good songs. One of the few cartoons that has musical numbers that I really like. The songs are good. It's basically Yogi. Yogi gets in so much trouble that they try to send him to the zoo, but they send Cindy instead. And he goes, or no, maybe I got it backwards. I forget how it goes, but it basically results in Yogi and Cindy going on the grand adventure across the country. And then like at the very end, Ranger Smith comes in a helicopter and takes it back. But it is a great cartoon, very well animated, like almost Disney-esque animation. But some of the later ones were okay. There was one I didn't like, which was Yogi Bear meets Casper for some reason.
Yeah, that one was a little wonky.
There was a Christmas one where he resisted the urge to hibernate just so he could have his first Christmas. That one was like another massive crossover with all the Hanna-Barbera stars of that time. Again, I'll have to
absolutely
say.
Yeah, I think for me my favorite one, I don't know why, and I honestly have no idea why, but I think it's because it's the one I remember the most is Yogi Bear and the Spruce Goose.
Yeah, I don't remember that one. I just remember it being like this giant plane.
It's basically parodying Howard Hughes.
Yeah,
you know. I'm trying to think. For other Hanna-Barbera stuff, we talked about that. Wacky Races.
Have we brought up Quick Draw McGraw yet?
Oh no, we got to talk about Quick Draw.
Now hold on there. I'll do the thing around here.
There's, I know we're going to talk about the classic stuff, but there was a couple of things. I think they were either on Boomerang or Cartoon Network or whatever. It's all the same. But really, really crude drawings of Queekstraw and Baba Louie, where at one point he's out in the country and there's no crime to him to fight, so he goes to the city. And all the city crime that he defeats in the city. And part of it, Baba Louie's like, you should see the things that he's doing off camera. And it tires him out because he gets rid of all the crime in the city and all the criminals go back out to the country. But it was just some really, really crude animation drawings of the characters. I like Quick Draw. I like him when he's in character, like when he's the sheriff of a town or something like that. What is it about him that you like the best?
Kabong! El Kabong.
El Kabong!
Which exists for no reason, because he's already the hero of the story, but he has to, for some reason, have a superhero identity. It's like, you're the sheriff! What the hell?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's crazy. I always liked Baba Louie in those cartoons, though, because he always was the one to kind of bring Queekstraw back. And I know I'm saying it like Baba Louie, and I just can't stop, because every time I hear Baba Louie call him Queekstraw, that's all I can call him.
Yeah. that was kind of a formula. The sheriff and his kind of mentally slow Hispanic sidekick. That was a formula that they had used again for Ricochet Rabbit.
God, yeah. Ricochet Rabbit. Oh.
I just remember Mel Blanc being, God, how did that line go? He said something like, blah, blah, Mr. Ricochet. I can't do that voice, but just kind of a slow-witted buffoon who would always follow around the sheriff and be the catalyst for many, many jokes.
Absolutely. So let's see here. I guess we should probably talk about the Smurfs briefly.
Oh, do we have to?
Smurfs, they were okay, Snorts. But
the Smurfs is kind of where things go downhill because I like Brainy and Clumsy, but everything else about the Smurfs is just such a drag. Because it's all very... You know what? It just feels like it's a cartoon about a big commune. So it's a lot of, we're going to help each other. We're going to...
God.
It's just so relationship-friendly, nothing-ever-goes-wrong type storytelling. And that's why Brainy and Clumsy are such a breath of fresh air, because you have the egomaniac and his bumbling sidekick, of course. Clumsy, clumsy, clumsy.
Good Lord. Oh, boy. Let's see here. Hanna-Barbera did Snorks, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. It was basically Smurfs underwater.
I like the Snorks a lot better than the Smurfs, though.
Yeah, they seem like they're just like a second-run Smurfs, but they are a bit more down-to-earth, so to speak.
yeah. It's, no pun intended. They're
it's like... It's like SpongeBob 0.5.
Well, if you think about it, it really is the beginning of... When did Snorks even come out? Oh, God. I should know this.
Mid to late 80s, I know that.
Snorks, 80... Oh, no, 84 to 88.
Oh, wow.
Okay. 84 to 88, no wonder. It's the precursor of Prowl and Donatello, because yeah. Michael Bell and Barry Gordon are All-Star and Junior. They would go on to do, obviously Michael Bell would go on to do Prowl and various other Transformers characters like Swoop and all that good stuff. And
Barry Gordon at that point was still the Tricks, or no, not the Tricks Rabbit, the Quick Bunny.
Quick Bunny, yeah. You know, somebody pointed out to me the other day, and I kind of knew this. I didn't really think about it, but somebody said, oh, my God, I just realized Billy West is the best person on Earth because he is Red Eminem. He is the voice of Red Eminem. And I think the only reason why that person noticed it was because of the Christmas commercial with the Eminems, with the, he does exist. Ah, they do exist when they meet Santa. Oh, man. No, I like the Snorks. It's interesting. It's a hell of a lot more fun than the Smurfs can be at times. Because the Smurfs, they always wanted to beat you over the head with a lesson. Whether they had to teach one of the other Smurfs a lesson, or whether they had to teach Grampy a lesson, or whether they had to teach one of the Smurflings a lesson. It's like, no.
Well, I will say this about the Smurfs. The Smurfs had one of the most nightmarish episodes ever, which was the Purple Smurfs. That was the one where it was almost like Hate Plague-esque, how the Smurfs were turning each other evil, and at the end it was only Papa Smurf left, and like he turned, but only right before the antidote spread throughout the village. It's like one of those zombie-esque nightmare. I don't like zombies at all, so that episode kind of didn't sit well with me when I was a child. Like, oh no. But then every episode after that was boring.
I'm trying to think. There was, God. There was an episode of something, and I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. You know, but Hanna-Barbera, they have done amazing things for animation over the years. I wish Hanna-Barbera production, like, things with their characters were still being done today. I know they're not, which is kind of sad. But I mean, I know, ladies and gentlemen, we haven't covered everything here tonight. Like I said, it's close to almost, if you take their debut in 36, it's 78 years. Well, that's till this year, so wait a second. 1989, yeah. Right?
Right.
Was 89 when they passed away?
89.
Let's see.
Bill Hanna lived well into the 90s, I think. Or maybe he died in the early 2000s. Joe Barbera just died, like,
recently.
Know, yeah, maybe 5, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we pretty much brought up, if we didn't mention it, I probably dropped a reference to it at some point in this episode. I mean, we mentioned pretty much everything except for the shmoo. Oh, wait. Ding.
Let's see here. I'm trying to see where is Legacy. Yeah, it doesn't say when he. Well, it'll say up here. Duh. He died in 2001.
Wow.
For Hanna. For Barbera, he passed away in 2006. So they're 5 years apart in death. Not that this really matters, but there's a note in here that William's widow Violet died 11 days before her 101st birthday in this year, 2014.
Wow.
So that's interesting. You know, Hanna-Barbera animation will always be at the forefront of everyone's minds. Right. You should really raise your children to watch the classics like this, because it's just simply amazing.
Yeah.
It really, really is.
The studio has been folded into Cartoon Network, but they still use...
Well, no, it's now under Warner now. It was folded into Cartoon Network, and now it's part of Warner Brothers Animation. Okay.
But they still use the studio name in posterity sometimes. I think mostly for Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think Scooby's the only character that has really survived.
Yeah.
I mean, that's gone on to have multiple series after the initial. See, this is the thing, like, I know we have a lot of great impressionists in the voiceover world today. I just don't know if I want to see an updated version of the Flintstones or the Jetsons.
Yeah.
Or, like, I would love to see something like a Wacky Races or, a Laugh Olympics, because those could be, oh my God, can you imagine a NASCAR version of Wacky Races?
Well, they have so many new characters now that they can use those characters and put them in a Wacky Races type of story. Yeah, the reason I don't really like revivals is just because when I watched the original cartoons, I fell in love with the actors. So I like the Alan Reed Fred, and I like the Mel Blanc Barney. And when I see an updated version, I just hear impersonators doing those voices, and I'm like, this really wasn't what I came to the table for. It's like someone else doing Kermit. It's very strange. It's like a Rodney Dangerfield impersonator. It's like, I like the original guy. I wish I could still see him, but he's gone. Seeing an impersonator does not fill that void.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Outside of Scooby, I think the only other character they use, because they still manufacture the cereal, is Fred and Barney for the Pebbles cereal stuff.
Yeah, but those commercials aren't the same. They kind of...
No.
Yeah, they don't really use the voices as much as they used to.
No.
Oh, one last thing about Scooby-Doo. Did you ever see the Johnny Bravo Scooby-Doo crossover?
No.
That was funny. I watched that yesterday. That is the greatest thing. You have to, like, track that down and watch it.
Oh boy. So there you go, folks. I think that's going to do it for us on Hanna and Barbera. We both love them. We both love all the work that they've, most of all the work that they've done.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I didn't mention was Curly Howard plays a shark.
Oh, my God. Oh, God, that.
Yeah, yeah. Jabberjaw.
Yeah, they recycled the Scooby-Doo formula for I don't know how many shows. They had the you had Josie and the Pussycats. You had Jabberjaw. You had – oh, my God. There was just, like, a conga line of, like, mystery-solving teens. I can't even, like, remember them all.
Yeah,
it was crazy. Speed Buggy. The Genie cartoon that I mentioned earlier, that was like that. Yeah. Some of those guest starred on the Scooby movies.
Yeah, they did. I hate to ask this question to close this out, but I have to bring it up since I am probably one of only seven friends that I know that actually like the character.
Uh-oh.
And the live action movies do not count. What is your opinion of Scrappy?
We almost got through this entire show.
Okay, so that's your opinion. You don't like Scrappy, do you?
Well, he's the second most annoying Hanna-Barbera character ever. No, wait. Maybe like the 10th, because I'm forgetting like Orbeez and all these other characters. The one character I was thinking of who's more annoying than Scrappy is Flim Flam.
They work well together. And Flim Flam is Susan Blue.
I know, but she's... Oh, God. 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. That's what killed the original Scooby-Doo franchise.
I love 13 Ghosts. For one reason. Vincent Price.
Yeah, he's in it. But after that cartoon, that was like the last of the classic era Scooby-Doo cartoons. And after that, they were just like... We got to do something else. And then that's when they came up with a pup named Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Now, I know Neil won't go over and listen to this because he just won't. I know he won't. But everybody, go listen to my interview with John Semper Jr. because John Semper Jr. was actually doing writing stuff on 13 Ghosts. He talks about
everything.
Oh, come on. Come on. He talks about Hanna-Barbera in our interview. And I don't care what people think of other people. If someone tells me a story about an animation studio that I love, I'm going to sit there and listen to him talk. And because, again, he brought to me, like what I was saying to you earlier in this episode, you know, I would have loved to gone back and seen stuff like that. And that's why I love talking to these people about if they had been involved with Hanna-Barbera, and he has some interesting stories. So we don't just talk about the 94 Spider-Man. you know, everyone hates Scrappy. Everyone says he's so annoying. Okay. What is more annoying? Characters that, because of how the format is for Scooby-Doo, that never get any growth in Shaggy and Scooby, or a character coming in trying to challenge them to get some character development. That's the way I view Scrappy. Scrappy came in, and he was like, you know, puppy power, I'm going to do it. I'm going to save you, Uncle Scooby. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to save the day. That's how I view Scrappy.
I mean, I can kind of see the joke they were going for, because you have this tiny little puppy, and he's like... He's really brave, and he wants to like fight with the villain, and he's obviously going to be ineffectual. So Shaggy and Scooby have to grab him and run, and that's kind of the joke. But I think part of it was that his first season on the show, it was still classic Scooby-Doo. You still had Fred and Velma and Daphne, and then they went away, and suddenly all you had was this. In fact, the whole mystery solving thing went away, and suddenly all you had was Shaggy, Scooby, and Scrappy in these comedy bits, and the comedy itself was not that great. I think a lot of that fell on Scrappy, so maybe it's not entirely fair to blame Scrappy for all the problems, but he was there for the bad stuff, and that's kind of why he gets maligned. But I will admit that there are a lot of Hanna-Barbera characters that are more annoying. I mean, like I said, there's Orbeez, there's Hoppy, there's Flim Flam. There's Scooter from GoBots. That's more annoying. So,
yeah, true. Well, anything from GoBots is more annoying.
Yeah, that's, we've spoken about GoBots more than we ever should have. But
you know, GoBots had some cool names and some cool voices, but other than that, Transformers is where it's at.
Yeah.
All right, well, up next, we are going to be talking about A Man of a Thousand Voices, Mel Blanc. I know technically he's not an animation director, but how can you not have an animation spotlight? And I don't think to this day in my 6.5 years of podcasting overall, not just the almost five and a half years with the, you know, doing the network, I don't think I've done just a full on Mel Blanc podcast, just talking about him himself. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be cool. And then after that, we're obviously going to be talking about Chuck Jones, which I'm betting the Chuck Jones episode is going to outlast this one.
Probably.
What have you got coming up, sir, over the holiday breaks?
I have the Decian holiday, the holiday digest, which is a collection of not all Christmas stories, but it's a bunch of short stories that are all fun and amusing and full of jokes and comedy about superheroes doing silly things. And I actually do have a Christmas story that should be up as you guys are listening to this, called the Valkyrie Yuki and Decian Christmas special, where it's a crossover with Valkyrie Yuki and lots of stupid funny things happen. And there's actually a Scooby-Doo episode coming up called Girl of Goo, Where Are You? Where they visit a haunted mansion because there's another character whose uncle died and said that she can only claim the inheritance if she stays in the mansion overnight. and there's a long hallway full of a bunch of doors that all look the same, and a guy in a mask, and clues everywhere, and you can probably guess what the joke at the end is going to be.
Warner Brothers is going to sue somebody.
No, because everyone does this joke. As long as I don't use any trademarks.
No, I know. I was making a reference to, sadly, Jay and Silent Bob, where Chris Rock says, George Lucas is going to sue somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. All right, so we hope you enjoyed this episode of Animation Direction. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
TV's Mr. Neil.
And I think we're going to let Muttley close it out.
Muttley! Stop polishing your medal and pay attention! Sassafrasif, rassif, frassif, rat, rastardly! What's that? That's better.
Guys with the dishpan hands? Boy, if I get my hands on that little green fink kazoo!
You called, Buster.
Kazoo! Where were you?
When?
Tonight! When do you think?
Boy, do you know what we've been through?
Of course not. I've been sleeping.
Oh, that's swell. You just take off and sleep whenever you want to, eh?
Well, how can we count on you when we can't count on you?
Well, it does present a problem, doesn't it? Why don't you try counting on yourselves?
But you said you were supposed to save us, to give us what we want.
My dear fellow, I'm not only undependable, but I'm a bit of a kook. That's why I'm here, remember? I'm being punished.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Don't look, I don't wish to stay here forever. And since I am supposed to serve you, I will try. But take heed. Don't ask for more than you can handle. You may get it.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Maybe.
Do you think you'll be back?
I don't know, Vaughn. Might be better if he wasn't. Look at all the trouble he caused us.
He caused us, or we've caused us. I wonder which it really is. I think you'll be back.
It looks that way. Night, Vaughn.
Good night, Fred.
In here, Fred.
Are you still up, Wilma?
Uh-huh. I've been thinking. Tonight wasn't your fault. It was Betty and mine.
I like that kind of thinking. How come?
Because we pressured you into taking us someplace you couldn't afford.
Oh, but you girls deserve to go.
No,
and
we were wrong, Fred. But thank you for trying to please us.
There's a moral to all this. When two people really care about each other, They have all the magic they need.
What happened to the lights?
I don't know.
Fred, where'd those flowers come from?
A surprise, Wilma. A complete surprise. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises from now on. See what I mean?
Silly. We just have a short or something. Anyway, who cares? Let them stay out.
Wilma Flintstone, I am with you.
A few more of these good deeds, and maybe they'll let me go back.
Scrammut! Ooh, sorry, Scrappy.
No problem. My fault. Eustace.
Scrap.
Oh, do you work here?
Scrappy! Yeah, for a while now. I've been busting my hump at this network for years! I mean, who do you think's been keeping the cartoon mystery fresh all this time? But do I get the same treatment as them? Not even close! Can I help you?
Oh, easy there, Scooby.
My name is Scrappy! And I've been here longer than all of you! Longer than you, and you!
Oh, mama.
The problem as I see it is too many cartoons! They're the kings and queens of this network, and they know it! I put in the hours, the late nights. Where's my key to the castle?
You are here today, Scrappy?
You are a genius! How'd you figure that out?
Cartoon Network, the best place for cartoons.
Not for me! Not for me, man!